I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Ash.
We're Building Bridges.
Luis Felice Leon has been covering across the country for Labor Notes Sean Fain's victory, the Reforma challenger to democratize the United Automobile Workers Union, and as president who leads the UAW in the most important and aggressive challenge to the big three auto giants, and whose members are poised to strike in one of the singularly most important labor issue in decades.
I'm actually looking at a heading that says, auto workers ready to rumble. Detroit Auto Workers International President Sean Fain speaking to the UAW rank and file on Facebook Live August 24th announced the results of a membership vote to authorize a strike against Ford, General Motors, and Stellantis. 97% in favor of striking. Some locals voted 99%. Luis Felice Leon, you've been traveling recently. You were in Kentucky. Tell us what the mood is and whether or not or how the leadership got to the point where after these many years, they are more considerate of union democracy and the rank and file and are ready to rumble with these three big auto giants.
I've been traveling through the Midwest, Michigan, Illinois, and Kentucky. What I'm hearing from workers, rank and file auto workers are fired up. Workers are saying that they're saving up to go the distance if a strike is called. The question isn't whether they'll strike. The question is for how long. And if I were a CEO at one of these big three companies, Ford, GM, Stellantis, I'd be pretty scared. It's a new day in the UAW, and the companies are on notice. The UAW was once described as the vanguard of the American labor movement. The union is making a very solid case for retaking that commanding leadership role, putting, as we like to say at Labor Notes, the movement back in the labor movement. I'm going to give a brief recap of the history of the UAW, because this was the first time, March of last year, that rank and file members got to directly elect their leadership. The first contested election since 1946. Some background is important to understand just the significance of what transformation the union has undergone. Fain was elected in March on a slate backed by the Reform Caucus, Unite All Workers for Democracy, UAWD, on a platform of no corruption, no concessions, no tears, ending nearly 80 years of one-party rule in the UAW. The reform slate won each seat they contested, coming into office with a clear mandate to take the union in a more militant direction in organizing, internal democracy, and solidarity against tears. I'll describe a little bit later what tears are. It was similar to the leadership shakeup in the Teamsters in 2021. This reform slate was made up of about 8 folks. There was an independent reformer named David Green out in Ohio and Indiana. He worked once upon a time at the General Motors assembly plant that was shuttered in 2019. And I'll talk a little bit about that because there's a big electric vehicle transition unfolding in Ohio. The UAW Reform Caucus that helped get Sean elected was the culmination of a decades-long reform movement within the UAW, fighting for a more democratic and militant union. The last time a reformer had won a seat in the UAW board was in 1986, when Jerry Tucker of the New Directions movement became a regional director. New Directions coalesced a group of reformers into a rank-and-file resistance movement in the 1980s and early 1990s. The last contested election for the presidency, except for Tucker's run for president in 1991, was in 1946. Walter Reuther won, consolidating his power in a 1947 sweep that accomplished what historian Nelson Lichtenstein described as nothing less than the elimination of his rivals from all posts within the UAW hierarchy.
We wound up, and as I said, I'm in the UAW as well. We wound up with a leadership, many of whose officials wound up incarcerated for corruption. It is extremely important to understand the role that union democracy and a transformative process informs the nature of developing a now militant labor movement.
Right, absolutely. So fast forwarding to 2019 to get to that point about corruption within the union, UAWD began campaigning for one member, one vote. The union's internal review board once described the union as functioning like a one-party state. But then an investigation by the Justice Department laid bare long-standing corruption in the union, including embezzlement, kickbacks, and collusion with employers. 13 union officials went to jail, including two former presidents. In December 2021, UAW members voted 63.6% in support of electing top officers through one member, one vote. These are the preconditions that make it possible for someone like Sean Fain to come into office. I've been deriving personal pleasure from Wall Street talking heads panicking on the air about what Sean Fain is saying about corporate greed.
Before we get into the issues, the demands, could you talk a bit about the tactics that are used right now to pressure the company?
This is the first time that they've actually created the semblance of a contract campaign. Unlike the Teamsters, though, they didn't have such a long ramp to build out this contract campaign that they didn't have that much time to actually mount a fierce contract campaign. But we are seeing very significant shifts. Namely, we actually know what the membership is demanding from these companies. Sean Fain has said, these are our members' demand. One of the things that I heard when I was out in the field talking to people was I would hear workers recite back to me lines that I heard Sean Fain say on the air on his Facebook Lives. And I was like, oh, you're tuning in. And they would say to me in return, no, it's that Sean Fain is actually listening to us. You have it backwards. So there is this synergy that has happened where the leadership is actually listening to the membership and they're channeling those feelings of being fed up and they're providing critical information. The big three have reported a combined $21 billion in profits in the first half of 2023. On top of profits of $250 billion over the last 10 years. So Sean Fain has shared this kind of information with members. He shared the economic proposal that Ford put on the table. The union demanded an end to tiers. Ford said, hell no, we're going to give you a six-year progression. Before that, when Stellantis put forward some demands, Sean Fain threw them in the trash. Right. This is not just theatrics. This is just a recognition that they campaigned on no tears and no concessions. And anything short of that, they are rejecting. It's a new day in the UAW. It's not mere rhetoric. I've seen Sean in Michigan, in Kentucky, and he's out there talking to the members, listening to them. For union leaders to be out there, most business unionists are scared of their members. This is a leadership that's actually embraced the membership and is trying to go to bat for them. Unlike previous contract cycles where the union says, this company is doing really well, we're going to go after them, reach a deal with them, and pattern that deal with the remaining two companies. That's usually how it's happened. So in 2019, GM was the target. This time around, all three are the targets for these negotiations. These companies are all guessing. They don't know what to make of this. Just as the UAW hasn't really mounted a serious contract campaign, these companies don't even know how to bargain a contract. They had such a cozy relationship with the previous administration. They don't know what to make of this. That's why they're calling it theatrics. No, what you're seeing is a fired up, rank and file insurgency.
Luis, what was the climate that really broke the back of an entrenched bureaucracy and completely economist unionism, where no political issues would see the light of day after such a marvelous history previously during the civil rights era and so on of the UAW? How do you analyze it? Was it the advent, for example, of the Teamsters and the UPS struggle? What do you think was able to break open, aside from the members, a much more progressive, a much more militant, or as you say at Labor Notes, and we've said at Billy Bridges, putting the movement back in the labor movement?
UAWD, Unite All Workers for Democracy, is a recent reform caucus, right? It comes on the heels of previous efforts like the Auto Workers Caravan, which was made up of many retirees. And there's some leaders within Unite All Workers for Democracy that came out of that. like Scott Holdenson from Ford, Local 551 in Chicago. It's been this slow accretion of militants finding each other in the wilderness and saying, we can do better in this union. And then they look to organizations like Teamsters for a Democratic Union and said, they've done it. What can we learn from them? There's a similar effort unfolding within the UFCW. Reformers there are also looking to these caucuses and saying, like, hey, how can we implement something within our own union? It was a combination of people searching for an alternative, and structural things happening in the economy helped move that along. So we had this experience of the pandemic. Historians often talk about the Patco effect, Reagan and the shellacking of the labor movement in the 80s. We've had a similar thing with the pandemic effect, where workers were rendered disposable, and that has fueled a lot of the militancy that we have seen from the UPS Teamsters contract fight, from nurses, carpenters in Seattle. Labor Notes has been in the front lines covering this uptick and upsurge. It's like this confluence of outer workers, intellectuals in the academy coming together and building this beautiful thing that recognizes that we are all one class fighting for dignity.
In terms of the demands of the workers, the demands of the leadership, which are together, what are the major demands being put on the auto companies?
UAW is pushing a demand that fall under a theme of better quality of life. This is something that our labor movement has given up over the years. We've given up on the dignity that we all deserve as workers, which is not something that is captured just by higher wages, but is captured by us having some control over our life. And our working days have become longer. We get paid less and less. Our benefits are paltry in comparison to previous generations. Across the working class are demanding more. The UAW is in effect holding a public teach-in on class-wide demands, using the Big Three negotiation as a platform to advance a demand that we all deserve a dignified life, not only for auto workers, but it's for all workers who must put in grueling hours on the job to earn paltry wages. Another big demand is job security for auto workers impacted by the impending transition to electric vehicles, given the seismic shifts that this will create. Another big demand is ending tiers. The tiers are a system in which long-term workers enjoy better wages and benefits than new hires doing the same work.
How does that differ than protecting seniority?
The tiers were created after the Great Recession. It was a concession that was given during the bankruptcy proceeding. So what ended up happening is that workers hired after 2007 don't have retiree healthcare or pensions. It cannibalized future hires for the sake of saving these companies. So that's a little different. Like a bedrock principle of the labor movement is equal pay for equal work. These folks are working the same jobs, doing the same thing, and just because of their hire date, they won't retire. So let's say they get to the seniority of 30 years. It doesn't matter because of their hire date. They will never get retiree health care or pensions. So it's not simply a question of you just started on the job. You got to earn it, you know, before you can get these things. No, they'll never get it. It's a system that just locks in a lower class of workers because they're deprived of retiree health care, pensions, and benefits. They can get to the top rate, but the progression is very long. It could be 8 years, and it depends on each company because they all have a different progression. So on the wage front, they could top out at $32 an hour, but they'll never get retiree healthcare or a pension so that people can retire with dignity. And these jobs are grueling. People suffer many muscle skeletal injuries. Just imagine what it's like to have put in 30 years on the shop floor, then not have any kind of healthcare if you need to have some surgery because you have a herniated disc. I don't mention that as a hypothetical. My own mother worked, she was a member of the steelworkers and worked at a paper mill out in Long Island, in New York. Her years on the job, she had herniated discs from all the lifting and bending that she did, where her backbones had to be welded together. And she's retired. Thankfully, you know, she had a good union job and she has a pension and lives in the Caribbean. But that's what workers should have. If they suffer an injury, the employer should provide for them so that they have health care. Those are some of the demands. There are other demands as well too. At Stellantis in particular, which is based in Amsterdam, it basically owns Chrysler alongside other brands. Stellantis, the number of temporary workers has exploded. Temporary workers is kind of like a euphemism because they're not temporary. They've been there for 5 years, some of them for 10 years, earning poverty wages. So one of the demands is to make some of those workers permanent employees. So that's another key demand. The one that I alluded earlier at the beginning when I was talking about the quality of life, they're talking about a shorter work week. That's the demand. A lot of people are excited about that demand because some of these workers are forced to put in 10 to 12 hours. Like one worker told me at Ford in Kentucky that he only has 3 hours of daylight. He doesn't have enough time to spend with his daughter before tucking her into bed. So these are like the real demands that are emerging from the rank and file. These are not demands from pie in the sky. These are the very deeply felt issues that workers are demanding redress from.
And what about plant closures and job banks?
If you could just tie that in with the whole issue of what it means to now be pushing for the development of electric vehicles.
Over the past 20 years, there have been 65 plant closures. When a plant closes, it's not just impacting that individual worker, but the communities in which they are rooted. That a supplier goes out of business, that means that the local restaurant that relied on people coming off the second shift and eating or having a beer, they can no longer do that. I was just in Belvedere, Illinois, where I went around town and talked to people about what's happened with the idling of Belvedere's. Basically, all those workers were laid off. Stellantis is using the idling of this plant as ransom in negotiations to force more concessions from the union. They're telling the UAW, we'll give you a new product in exchange for X, Y, and Z, right? So that's kind of like what I've heard workers describe the negotiations as. That's their logic. So what the UAW is demanding is that if there's a plant closure, that there is a jobs program where workers can do some community service or something of that sort so that they're not left without a paycheck. So it puts in some safeguards so that the company doesn't think that they can just close a plant with no consequence. And that is particularly important in this moment with the transition to electric vehicles. There are various studies out there about whether the number of workers required to build a gas-powered vehicle is greater than what will be required for an EV-powered car. There is a very real debate happening about what this transition will mean for auto workers, making sure that those jobs that are created are good jobs. The federal government is doing its part, pouring billions of dollars in loans, subsidies to help this build out of electric battery plants throughout the country without any strings attached. So I was just in Lordstown, Ohio. One of the reformers that ran as part of the slate with this guy named Dave Green. He used to work at the General Motors assembly plant, which was shut down in 2019. A stone's throw away from where that assembly plant was, there's now an EV battery plant that's the equivalent of 30 football fields and employs about 1,100 workers. They were, until very recently, earning $15 and $16.50 an hour, and they were exposed to multiple hazards, fires, chemical burns. And because of public pressure and shop floor organizings, the workers just won an interim agreement that boosts their wages to $20 and $21 an hour. But still, these workers don't have the health and safety committees that GM workers have. This is a joint venture. So it's a separate company outside of GM. It's the Wild West. These workers go into these machines and engineers turn them on with workers still inside. It's really wild that in the U.S., the Biden White House is giving all this money away and workers are being subjected to all these hazards that they may not even know. Many of the folks that I spoke to, some of them were women and they were worried these chemicals will impact their reproductive health. We are really living through one of the most transformative moments in our economy in terms of what's happening within this transition to the green energy future. If you read my story in Indies Times magazine, you'll get a real glimpse at the horror and the nightmare that these workers are enduring in these factories, all of it funded by our own taxpayer dollars.
What is the UAW prepared to do to take, aside from economist issues, wage and benefit issues, which are of such importance, yes, but to really educate and politicize public about working people, their value, and what they deserve, and to really tackle the political establishment who it has all too often just capitulated to and has hardly been a friend in terms of legislative initiatives and so on of the labor movement of the working class. I mean, do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I'll take the first half of your question about people's perceptions of an auto worker as potentially a fat cat. And the media in the U.S. has really done a disservice to manufacturing workers. I come from a blue-collar family myself, and I was always aware that the shoes that I wore came from a factory. The phone that I read stories about the demise of American manufacturing, or just manufacturing worldwide, was produced in a factory somewhere. The minerals used for the phone were mined somewhere. There were workers involved. These things were not just conjured as if by a magic trick. These corporations, they make it seem as if they are the ones that are producing this without the labor of the workers that make them these profits and generate all of this. So the most important thing to remember is that our society will grind to a halt if it wasn't for the labor of billions of workers worldwide. And what we are seeing right now is their visibility, is their anger in our faces so that we can no longer ignore it. Corporations like to talk about, we create jobs, we do X, Y, and Z. If you do this, then you're going to kill the jobs. They talk about themselves as the job creators. If that is the case, well, we are the creators of their wealth. We are all part of this mighty working class. What we have seen over the years is like the business class tried to divide us. Say, if you are a legal aid worker, well, you're different than a blue collar worker. You're doing real work as a blue collar worker versus somebody else, you know, going to the court and standing with tenants, fighting for their rights to remain in their homes. So what we are seeing is the working class coming together, recognizing that we have one true enemy, and that is the billionaire class. So yeah, these workers, by and large, earn about $15 to $18 an hour. This is what folks are making. If their pay rate were to have kept up with inflation, they would be earning upwards of like $40 an hour. We shouldn't be talking about how can we get to the bottom, but how should we go to the top? We should have a horizon that's larger, not look at like the lowest wage worker and say that's how we should all be. We should be raising standards, not lowering them. That's what we're hearing from the UAW. And the standards that they're raising are not just economistic demands about higher wages. They're talking about the quality of life that we each should be entitled to as a matter of course. They've been putting up these posters from the 1950s when the union was talking about a shorter work week where you earn the equivalent of 40 hours of work, but you put in 34 hours. These ideas have always been around. But with the pandemic and all these other things that have been happening, they've come to the forefront of our consciousness as a class, and we are pushing for them. In terms of the Biden administration, the union has gone out there. They're not going to, you know, toe the line like other unions and say, we're going to vote for you no matter what. No, they're demanding that Biden makes a real choice, stands with workers in this just transition to an electric vehicle future. So far, you know, he's waffled. We know that Biden intervened and Congress intervened to block a rail strike. So the question is not whether they'll intervene. The question is how and on which side are they going to intervene? It's going to be hell in the streets if they intervene on the side of these big three companies that have been making billions of dollars in profits. He has to do the right thing. union workers are demanding that and applying the heat. We're seeing that in the political arena too, in terms of not taking our votes for granted.
And I want to say, all the world that's owned by idle drones is ours and ours alone. We have laid the wide foundations, built it skyward, stone by stone. It is ours, not to slave in, but to master and to own, while the union makes us strong. That is from Solidarity Forever. Luis Feliz Leon, you're wonderful.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Ash.
And we say educate, educate, and organize for another world is possible if we choose to make it so. Thanks for listening.